ISKCON founder Charya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaved Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishvaraya Krishna Sadhguru Shmati Bhaktivedanta Swami Kanamana Namaste Sarasakam Gaura Ramakachandi Nibhashekhar Shri Bhadi Vaskachari Zitani Jai Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text 42. Soham harer marcha vidambanena Drisho nirnam kala yato vidhatu Nanyo palaksha paravim prasarach Sharami pashyan gata vishmayotra Soham harer marcha vidambanena Drisho nirnam chala yato vidhatu Nanyo palaksha paravim prasarach Charami pashyan gata vishmayotra Soham harer marcha vidambanena Drisho nirnam chala yato vidhatu Nanyo palaksha paravim prasarach Charami pashyan gata vishmayotra Others chant. Thank you. Saham. Therefore. I. Okay, so it's therefore I. I'm sorry. Hare. Of the personality of Godhead. Marcha. In this mortal world. Vidambanena. Without being recognized. Drisha. On sight. Nirnam. Of the people in general. Chalayata. Bewildering. Vidahatu. In order to do it. Na. Not. Anya. Other. Upalakshya. Seen by others. Padavim. Glories. Prasadat. By the grace of. Charami. Do travel. Pashan. By seeing. Gata Vishmaya. Without doubt. Atra. In this matter. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. I'm not astonished at this, having traveled over the world without being seen by others. The activities of the personality of Godhead, which are like those of a man in this mortal world, are bewildering to others. But I know of His greatness by His grace, and thus I am happy in all respects. Purport. Although he was the brother of Dhritarashtra, Vidura was completely different. By the grace of Lord Krishna, he was not foolish like his brother, and thus by his brother's association could not influence him. Dhritarashtra and his materialistic sons wanted to falsely lord it over the world by dint of their own strength. The Lord encouraged them in this, and thus they became more and more bewildered. But Vidura wanted to achieve sincere devotional service to the Lord, and therefore he became a soul completely surrendered to the absolute personality of Godhead. He could realize in the progress of his pilgrim's journey, and thus he was freed from all doubts. He was not at all sorry to be bereft of his hearth and home, because he now had experienced the dependence on the mercy of the Lord is greater freedom than the so-called freedom at home. A person should not be in the renounced order of life unless he is firmly convinced of being protected by the Lord. This stage of life is explained in Bhagavad Gita as Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi. Every living entity is factually completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. But unless one is in the pure stage of existence, he cannot be established in this position. The stage of dependence is called Sattva Samshuddhi, or purification of one's existence. The result of such purification is exhibited in fearlessness. A devotee of the Lord who is called Narayana Para is never afraid of anything because he's always aware of the fact that the Lord protects him in all circumstances. With this conviction, Vidura traveled alone and was not seen or recognized by any friend or foe. Thus he enjoyed freedom of life without obligation to the many duties of this world. When Lord Sri Krishna was personally present in the mortal world in his eternal blissful form of Shyamasundara, those who were not pure devotees of the Lord could not recognize him or know his glories. Avajananti mamudha manushim tanam ashritam, Bhagavad Gita 9:11. He is always bewildering to the non-devotees, but he is always seen by the devotees by dint of their pure devotional service to him. Om jnanatam randasya gananjana salakaya chaksurum kamina tasma shri gurave namaha. Panchakopatribhyascha kripasindubhyebhyascha patitano pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. So the first line here says, I'm not astonished at this, and this is a reference to yesterday's verse, to the last verse, which describes that Dhritarashtra had driven him from his home, influenced by the evil-minded Duryodhana and his sons. So it's described that Dhritarashtra is bewildered by the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada says, desiring to lord over the material world, Krishna bewilders them. And the last lines of the purport, he says, when Lord Sri Krishna was personally present in the mortal world, in his eternal blissful form of Shyamasundara, those who were not pure devotees of the Lord could not recognize him or know his glories. Avajananti mamudha Manishim Tana Marshutana. Right? That fools cannot understand him when he appears in the human form from Bhagavad Gita. Now, in contrast, Vidura knows Krishna's greatness. That's what he is saying in this verse. He understands. He knows who Krishna is. He's dependent upon him, and therefore he is happy. So knowing Krishna makes him dependent on him as he travels. So it said here, he does not miss his home, as dependence makes him fearless. Dependence on Krishna makes him fearless. So this is interesting because, of course, Vidura, not exactly that he left home, he was actually thrown out by Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra says, you know, you better be out of here by sundown, kind of, or whatever they say. You know, that's like the Western expression. You know, in other words, but he wasn't sorry about this. And he didn't really particularly blame Dhritarashtra. He expressed previously he had felt compassion for Dhritarashtra because Dhritarashtra was so bewildered. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport here the qualities of a great devotee such as Vidura, who has really renounced everything in this material world and has become completely dependent upon Krishna. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita 16.1. And of course, 16.1 through 3 describe the qualities of what's called Daivim Abhijatasya, those who are born of godly qualities. So born of godly qualities, of course, can mean demigods, but generally it means great devotees. They have godly qualities because they are complete, pure devotees of the Lord. And the first quality that's mentioned in 16.1 is Abhayam Sattva Shat Samshudhir Jnana Yoga. Now, in the purport to 16.1, it's interesting. Prabhupada actually discusses the order of sannyas for several paragraphs. This idea of renunciation, of one who's in the renounced order, because it directly applies to this, and it's very appropriate for our discussion verse today about the situation of Vidura, who, by being driven, by leaving his home, was now in really the sannyas order of life. I don't know if he technically took sannyas, but he was sannyas, because he just wandered by himself. It says, unknown by anyone. In other words, although he wasn't, how to say this, you know, because he wasn't a full-fledged, you know, brother in the same way that, you know, Dhritarashtra and Pandu was, he was considered because he was the son of a maidservant. At the same time, he was connected to a great family, royal family. And his father was Vyasadeva, so wasn't he? Yes, I mean, so here's he's a great personality, but he just traveled unknown to anyone. In other words, he wasn't accepting any honors, he wasn't accepting any recognition, but he just traveled the world with nothing except his dependence on Krishna's mercy and Krishna's protection. So it says a sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life, must be situated in abhayam, fearlessness, Sattva Samshuti, purity, and Jnana Yoga, knowledge. That's from 16.1 purport of Srila Prabhupada. So the sequence here, the philosophical sequence, is that with knowledge of Krishna, and when one purifies the self, that means purifying one of all material desires, one becomes surrendered to Krishna, and the result is that one becomes fearless. So, you know, this is a very, very important message that we're having, getting here in the verse and in Srila Prabhupada's purport. In fact, this applies to all of us. This is our process in this life. This is our process in bhakti yoga, our process of trying to purify our lives through bhakti, purifying the very self, and then becoming surrendered fully to Krishna, and then we have no fears, no distress in this material world once one can actually reach that position, which may be a few steps away for us still, but that we know, we understand. That is the process. That is the goal. So the first thing that Prabhupada is emphasizing here is this purification of the self, he calls it. Sometimes we just say purification, but I think it's interesting that Prabhupada is discussing this purification of the self, the Atma. And this is described many places, of course. And one verse I kind of liked is Bhagavatam 2.8.5. It says, the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, which means the Bhagavatam, sound incarnation, enters the heart of the self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, very beautiful analogy here, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Sometimes we say greed, lust, anger, and greed. Here it says lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like the autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Very, very nice translation, beautiful verse here. And this process of bhakti yoga, beginning with hearing, has been described, results in purification. And Srila Prabhupada's purport, he says, where other methods may be superficially good for the time being, there is a risk of becoming muddy again due to the agitation of the mind. In other words, if you're doing other processes, you may experience some purification, some control of the mind, that can very easily slip back. Now, in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport to the same verse, and he just explains this analogy a little bit more. He says, by mixing a substance in a jar of water, that water alone is purified. But not all the waters in rivers or ponds. The contamination also remains in the jar, your jar of water, and is not completely destroyed. By shaking the jar, the dirt becomes disturbed again. Dhyana and yoga purify some people, but not at all, and not completely. So the mudding, of course, is through, you know, the different processes where, again, those material desires, contaminations, anartas come up again. But we also talk about the clearing of the water in autumn. So, of course, what happens there is, you know, autumn means after the rainy season, which makes everything turbulent and everything's muddy and dirty. In the autumn season, it's generally fairly dry, not much rain, and at least in India. And then everything subsides, the mud subsides, and it becomes clear again. So it's explained, the process of karma, jnana, and yoga gives temporary purification, but a slight agitation, everything becomes muddy. But one may have some control over the mind and senses that can be lost easily, but if that same purification is results of bhakti, it's described that it becomes permanent. In other words, any gain from bhakti yoga is permanent. You know, Krishna says there's no loss or diminution. Whatever we gain, any advancement in Krishna consciousness, in our purification through the process of devotional service, is never lost. Even if we don't make it this lifetime, we start, as described in the Gita, at that point. Now, of course, purification is somewhat difficult for the conditioned soul. I mean, after all, we've been muddying the waters here for many, many lifetimes, right? So it may take some time. And, of course, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we begin the processes, we have some faith, we associate with devotees, and then we begin bhajana kriya, we begin hearing, chanting, the processes of devotional service. And then we're at the stage of anartha nivritti. Now, anartha nivritti is when we're starting to cleanse the heart of all of this muddy water. So we perform sadhana bhakti, to clear the mind, the senses, and the body of all bad habits. But we're dealing with our mind and senses that have been conditioned for lifetimes. So it is a process, and it doesn't always feel so easy. But nevertheless, it is happening, inevitably. So we've developed these gross and subtle bodies that have built for many, many lifetimes. And these experiences cause distress and mental disturbance. It's described there's two sources of these mental disturbances. One is called anartas. Those are unwanted habits from past conditioning. In other words, because of our past lifetime experience, we may have habits that are just almost, well, we say things are habitual, which means they come almost naturally, almost without our will, right? And there's also what's called samskaras, which are unwanted impressions in the mind. So sometimes we can control anartas, especially if we're following the four acre principles. Those are the worst bad habits. So the devotee can somewhat control some of these bad habits by basically the process of bhakti yoga. But the samskaras, those impressions in the mind, are still there. And that's kind of what seems like takes a long time and really takes deep practice of devotional service to rid ourselves of all those mental impressions. And unfortunately, I think we've all experienced this, if we continue to put those impressions in the mind, you know, through all sorts of things unrelated to Krishna, it simply means more we've got to clear out. Everything, all every impression that goes in the mind has to be cleared. Now, if we had to do that one step at a time through some process, it'd be impossible. Of course, Krishna, being very merciful, Krishna purifies the heart of his sincere devotee. Not even as pure devotee, just as sincere devotee, the purification process is happening. So these deep mental impressions or samskaras, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Jiva Dharma, there are two types. One is called Pratana, which is from our past lives, and there is Adhunika, of the present life, which we can remember. We don't remember the ones from past lives, but they're still affecting us. And these have helped to frame, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, your mental constitution, your temperament, and your contemplations. In other words, basically our consciousness. So, discussion of this contamination of consciousness, there's a discussion in July 6, 1976, by Srila Prabhupada in room conversation. I'm quoting this one because, how do I say this humbly? Anyway, I'll just say I was very fortunate by the mercy of Prabhupada to be there. So I actually heard this conversation when Prabhupada was in Potomac, Maryland in 1976. Sarup Damodar reads a purport to Srila in the Srimad Bhagavatam verse, which says, when consciousness is polluted by material contamination, it's called ahankara. Then Rupa Nuga says, so the consciousness can be contaminated according to the mode which it is associated. Prabhupada says, yes, prakriti jan gunan. Sarup Damodar, actually, consciousness is a symptom of life. So when we say contaminated consciousness, the quality of life is there, but somehow, Prabhupada says, yes, that is mixed with material modes. Yes. Rupanuga, originally it is goodness, pure goodness, you say. Everything in the beginning is Prabhupada. I give you an example. It's like water falling from the sky. It is crystal clear. It's still water. But as soon as it touches the earth, it becomes muddy. But that muddiness can be filtered. Rupanuga, plus muddiness is the character of the mud, not the consciousness. And it can be cleansed, filtered out. Prabhupada said, yes, that filtering process is devotional service. So unless the water is different from the precipitated matter, how can it be filtered? So basically, Prabhupada is saying, although we come in contact with the contamination of the material world, material ones of nature, the soul itself does not become contaminated because the soul is always pure, but it's clouded with this contact with the modes of nature. And because the filtering process, of course, the Bhakti Yoga, it can basically separate itself so the soul itself is pure and then becomes uncontaminated by these different material modes. So we need to work to become free of these mental conditionings, and the process of sadhana bhakti is what purifies the mind. And when the heart is cleansed, more and more one is able to experience Krishna. In the science of self-realization, Prabhupada describes the famous verse of Shikshastaka by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. He says, Marjanam means cleanse, and Dharpanam means mirror. The heart is a mirror, just like a camera. As the camera takes all kinds of pictures day and night, so also our heart takes pictures and keeps them in an unconscious state. Those are the samskaras, the impressions. He says, psychologists know this. The heart takes so many pictures and therefore it becomes covered. Talking about the unconsciousness, which is a psychological principle that was first discussed by Sigmund Freud, of course, about 100 years ago. We do not know when it has begun, but it is a fact that because there is material contact, a real identity is covered. Therefore, cheto dharpana marjanam, one has to cleanse the heart. So, in the beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam establishes this very principle of purification, and it comes through hearing. Srinvatam svakata krishna punya shravana kirtanam hridyanta sto hi bhadrani vidinoti suhit satam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul, in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous, when properly heard and chanted. Now, in Bhagavad Gita 16.1 also says, as well as purification, knowledge is needed. Jnana yoga is described. But this means not ordinary knowledge or impersonal understanding. It means knowledge that must move one from the theoretical to the realized. So bhakti is meant to be realized in the heart. And this is there in almost from the very beginning, everything Prabhupada said, even the most simple thing. He'd say, chant and be happy. What does that mean? We chant, we do the practice, and there is a result. One becomes happy. So that means there's actually some realization, some experience of the chanting. Otherwise, why wouldn't be happy? You're just chanting, saying some words. No, you're not just saying some words. You're connecting with Krishna. Krishna in the heart is purifying the heart one is becoming happy through the process of chanting. Not just purification, though. It's not like a mechanical process. It's actually because we're experiencing Krishna. Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, that rasa gives us happiness. So even in the beginning, we have a little rasa with the holy name. That's sort of our beginning in devotional service. So, you know, there's different types and stages of knowledge. Actually, I thought this was interesting. I don't know too much about this, but in a lecture in Prabhupada in 799, Prabhupada said there are different stages of understanding. Pratyaksha, paroksha, aparaksha, adhoksha, aprakrita. Ordinary understanding, direct reception is pratyaksha, then higher is paroksha, to gather knowledge of higher authorities. Above that is aparoksha, realization. And then he says adhoksha means beyond the understanding material senses. And above that, there is aprakrita, completely transcendental. So bhakti is on the transcendental platform beyond adhoksha. So a Krishna conscious practitioner gains realized knowledge, knowledge of transcendence, as Prabhupada is saying. It is beyond even spiritual knowledge. In other words, having a theoretical understanding of spiritual life. It means realized knowledge, knowledge of Krishna, of transcendence. And that process happens by this cleansing process, which leads to transcendental vision and transformation, spiritualization of our consciousness, or, as it's described, the change of heart. So it's a qualitative change. And what's the best process of purification? Remembering him. 1.2.15 says, with sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knots of reactionary work by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? So as we hear, chant, and remember, Shravanam Kirtam Vishnu Smaranam, then the purification begins and our attraction and attachment to Krishna is there. So this remembering is very, very important as a way of practice. And before describing all the rules of Vaidhi Bhakti, Rupa Goswami famously quotes the verse in BRS 128, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Smartavya sadatam vishnor vishmartavya najatu chit. Sarve vidhi vishena shur etayor eva kinkara. This is from the Padma Purana, but it's also described in Majjhima Lila 22.113, where Chaitanya quotes it. It says, Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. He should always be remembered and never forgotten at any time. All the rules and regulations mentioned in the Shastra should be the servants of these two principles. So Rupa Goswami wanted to make it real clear. We're not a religion or a spiritual practice of rules and regulations. We follow rules and regulations, but they're for a purpose. And that purpose is to always remember and never forget Krishna. So following rules and regulations for just no purpose other than following, that's called Niyamagraha. So it's very important that we do try to always remember. And how do we remember Krishna at the beginning stages of Vaidhi Bhakti? Especially all the time. That's very difficult. One thing was reassuring to me is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary on Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu 111, you know, the famous verse. He says, satatam means every day, not every second. He says, otherwise, constant remembrance is not possible in the beginning stages, and one would lose faith in injunctions. In other words, so not to discourage, you know, us neophyte devotees that we can't remember Krishna at every second. He says, at least every day. You know, at least, you know, you do your regular practices, you're chanting japa, you're hearing Bhagavatam like that. So you're at least remembering something every day. And so we have to have that daily sadhana. Now, I feel strongly, though, we shouldn't just be kind of rest on that. That's okay. I do a little bit of devotional service. I sometimes remember Krishna. We actually should be striving to always remember Krishna. And I attempt to do that, to always remember Krishna every day and everything I do. And I fail in this endeavor about every 5 minutes after thinking that because it's very difficult. So although it's a very, very worthy goal and we should keep that as a goal, let's face it, most of us cannot remember Krishna at every second of every day. But still, that's our goal. That's what we want. Remembering Krishna within our heart, giving us inspiration, giving us fearlessness, right? Giving us realization, inspiration, and best of all, loving relationship with him. So what's the best method of doing this? In the Srila Prabhupada says in a little book, Second Chance, I think it's about the story of Ajamil. He says, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. That is the best way of remembering Krishna's age and always remembering Krishna ensures a return home back to Godhead. So one thing that's easier than remembering is actually chanting. Right? We can always, you know, at least we can try, as we go through the day, and I know myself, and probably many of you do, that you get involved in different activities. And sometimes you don't exactly remember Krishna, although even if the activity is related to Krishna or in Krishna's service, sometimes we don't directly think of Krishna at the time all the time. But it's actually easier to chant. We can keep chanting. If we keep chanting, thinking, you know, Krishna's names, chanting Hare Krishna, then we're remembering. Chanting is the same as remembering. In fact, in the processes of remembering, Jiva Goswami explains in the Bhakti Sandarbha that how do we remember? We remember, let's see if I can get this straight, Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Leela, right? We remember the names, the form, the qualities, and the pastimes of Krishna. But as far as remembering the name, Jiva Goswami said it's actually better to chant the name than even to remember it. So that's more powerful because that's the Sankirtan. Jagya is the age, you know, this is our Yuga Dharma that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us. So very, very powerful chanting the names. And through this purification, the surrender of the knowledge, what is the result? A devotee is not fearful because they expect the protection of Lord Krishna. So the devotees have no need to fear. In the purport, Prabhupada just quotes Narayana Para. That this is and the full verse is Narayana Para Sarve Nabustaschana Bibhyati Svarga Pavarga Narekesh Apitulyarta Darshina. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. That's Bhagavatam 6:17-28. So that's what's been described here, Vidura's condition. How as he traveled, depending upon Krishna, he became fearless. He became Narayana Para, always just dependent upon Lord Narayana, Lord Krishna. And of course, Krishna says very clearly his conclusion, Bhagavad Gita, which we all know, Sarva Dharma Pritija, Ma Sucha, do not fear. Right? So, a devotee should always be turning to Krishna in times of danger or in any time. Now, we have, of course, the example of Prahlada Maharaj. He only remembered Krishna. He did not even ask Krishna to save him. When he was being almost threatened to be killed by his demoniac father, Hiranyakasipu, he didn't say, oh, Krishna, come here and save me. He just chanted Hare Krishna. And Krishna saved him. That's a very, very high principle. That's very, very elevated. But it's natural to try to preserve the body. Vishnu Chakravarti, of course, says that it's natural that in the times of danger, you know, one naturally wants to preserve the body, you know, because we're so closely connected to it. We use our intelligence to keep the body and soul together. But we know whatever the result is, what is provided is up to Krishna. Krishna may protect us or not, but, you know, we do what's necessary with our intelligence. We don't stand in the middle of the road and saying, I won't even pay any attention to the cars because Krishna will protect me. Because we're not foolish. And Prabhupada mentioned this two or three times. He says, yes, we depend on Krishna, but we don't say, come on, tiger, come and eat me. That was the example he gave. So there has to be a little common sense in this. But Srila Prabhupada confirms that protection begins immediately for the devotees. And just as Vidura wandered everywhere fearlessly, the devotee also tolerates conditions and depends upon Krishna. So the goal of this devotional service is complete surrender, taking shelter of Krishna, as Vidura did. And this is described sometimes as Atmanivedanam, it's full surrender. And examples are given of Bali Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, who, of course, I think he is the representative of Atmanivedanam, isn't he? One who gave up everything He says, Krishna, okay, you take me, bind me up, whatever, I'm yours. And, of course, Ambarish Maharaj just famously did everything. He offered his body, his words, you know, he did all the nine processes of devotional services. Bhakti Sandarbha Jiva Goswami is explaining the different processes, and he explains Atmani Vedana. He says, I consider, and he quotes Bhagavatam, but I consider, this is Krishna speaking, but I consider that offering Atma to the Supreme Lord, Svamartpanam, who is one's friend, is recommended in the Vedas for the saintly people. And then Jiva says, sometimes it means offering the pure Atma to the Lord. Now, here's a verse that I'd never heard before. It's Yamunacharya, Stotaratnam 49, for those of you who want to look this up. Jiva Goswami quotes it. Yamunacharya says, whoever I may be, either a soul inhabiting the body and other material elements, or a deva, or a human body made of gunas, today I offer that I to your lotus feet. And that's the meaning of this sattva samshuddhi, the purification of one's existence. The devotee wants to surrender one's very self, our very existence, back to Krishna, who is the source of our existence. Sometimes we think about surrendering our words, surrendering our body, surrendering our minds. Well, yes, these things we do. Everything that we have as far as the soul's inhabitation of this material body and mind, we offer back to Krishna, because that's what we have to offer. You know, what do we have to offer them to elements? But ultimately, we are actually want to offer our very self, the Atma. That's what it means, Atma Nivedana. It means offering the self. And what does that mean? I was thinking about this. It's a very, very deep concept, actually, because who are we, you know? The pure Atma. And where does the Atma come from? Obviously, it comes from Krishna. You know, there is nothing but Krishna. Krishna is, you know, Anadir, you know, Adi Purusha, the very first person, the original person. So although it's very difficult to describe time sequence, which is spiritual in material terms, because it's not material and it doesn't mean that there's this sort of finite time limitations in the spiritual world or spiritual understanding that we have here. So when we say the jiva is created by Krishna, it's correct but not correct. You know what I mean? In other words, yes, we come from Krishna, and Krishna, obviously, if he was the, you know, Adi Purusha, he's the origin. Anadir, Adir, you know, Govinda, Sarvakarna, Karna. Cause of everything, he's the original personality, but it's not like at a certain time, you know, like 18 billion years ago, we were created. It doesn't work that way, because that's the material conception of time. And the spiritual conception, we'll have to wait until we're at that point of pure realization, probably, to understand that fully. You know, but we can sort of understand. It means that, because Krishna says very clearly, in his first discussion, the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. So he's saying it's not like there was a time when you did not exist and then exist, or in the future you're not going to exist again. So, you know, the Jiva Shakti, energy of the Lord, is always existing with him. So all of his energies, all of his shaktis are there with him, although he is the origin of those shaktis. I think we can understand that. I mean, that's the extent of my realization on this topic, basically. So if we came from Krishna, he is our very origin, and if Krishna is everything, right, it's not that there's anything separate from Krishna. If there's something separate from Krishna, that means it almost would mean it's greater than Krishna or not under his control. How could Krishna, who is God, who is the supreme controller, maintainer of everything, have things that are not under his control? Now, we have some minute independence, but that doesn't mean that we're, you know, we can do anything, we're out of Krishna's control. No. So he gives us a little independence. Yeah, you can do this. You can come in the material world, give it a try. Good luck with that. Really didn't work very well, did it? That was a bad choice, folks. So let's try again. Get out of this material world and voluntarily, fully surrender to Krishna and experience the unlimited, infinite joy of the spiritual world and our relationship, our original rasa with Krishna. That's what we're meant to do. And by some, I don't know why, I don't know how, but somehow, let's just say we made a bad choice. And we came to this material world. Now our job is to get out of here and come back to Krishna. And that means we have to totally surrender to Krishna. And then we understand that our very self, is not different from Krishna. In one way, we're different and non-different. You know, achinta beta beta tattva. You know, Krishna is everything. We are part and parcel of Krishna. But Krishna is very great. We are very small. We are his servant. He is our master. So, you know, both things are there. And that's the absolute beauty of Krishna conscious philosophy, which really explains everything far beyond any other philosophy. I can be very, not very unimpartial there and say this philosophy certainly gives the best, the highest understanding of reality of metaphysics because of the very high philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, it's in the Bhagavad Gita, it's in the scriptures, it's not, but Lord Chaitanya emphasized it. He coalesced, you know, say, all the other Vaishnava philosophies and said the highest essence is his achinta beta beta tattva, which means that the individual jiva soul and all of his energies are different. They're separate energies, but at the same time, they are one with him. So we want to become one with Krishna in that sense, that we want to become part of the whole of which we strayed. An example is given is like a spark of fire away from the main fire, or a little ray of the sunshine, which is, you know, become somehow separated from the sun. So the ray needs to be part of the sun, and the spark of fire needs to be part of the fire. It doesn't mean that it doesn't retain individuality, because the jiva has its own, you know, self. It's explained very nicely in Paramatma Sandarbha that the soul has volition, it has choice, it has its own shakti, little shakti. Krishna has, you know, incredible total shakti. We have a little shakti. We have some independence. We can make choices. You know, we can choose. You know, that means we have, you know, some free will. Now, we all have experienced, we all understand, there's misuse of free will and the proper use of free will. Misuse of the free will means, oh, I'd like to try being like Krishna. I'd like to try to be the controller. I'd like to try to enjoy, see what that's like. And here we are, suffering the threefold miseries of the material world, birth after birth, life after life. Or we can choose, I understand. Not only is Krishna everything, that Krishna is the supreme controller, but how fortunate we are that Krishna is the supreme loving father, the supreme loving friend, the supreme lover, the supreme everything, in perfect loving relationship with all of his energies, with all living entities, with his incredible, and when you think about it, it's beyond the material intelligence that Krishna has expanded himself. He's made all of these jivas, or whatever, they've all expanded from him. How many jivas do you think there are? I have no clue. Trillions, hundreds of trillions, quadrillions, I don't know how big of a number we can come up with. And yet he's expanded into the hearts as the Paramatma, into every one of those, every one of us. And not only that, he also has a pure relationship as Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead with every one of us, where we all have this eternal loving relationship. And Krishna gives us whatever we want, however we choose to relate to Krishna and interact with him. If we want to see Krishna as God, as awe and reverence, we can go to Vaikuntha and worship him like that. Or we like the form of Krishna, but we still see him as God. We still see that his powers. Maybe we go to Dwarka and experience him that way, as beautiful Krishna, but with seeing his power. Or if we just want to experience the beauty and the sweetness and the wonder of Krishna as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, we can experience Krishna in Vrindavan, in one of the rasas there, as a servant, or as a friend, or as his lover, or as a parent. So we have this wonderful opportunity, and I guess as Prabhupada would say, there is no loss in this process. You're not giving up anything. What are we giving up? We're giving up suffering. We're giving up the material modes of nature. We're giving up this inferior energy for a superior energy. We're giving up temporary, unhappy relationships for a permanent, eternal, beautiful, perfect relationship. So, If we can develop that understanding, then we'll become like Vidura and be able to go anywhere, be anywhere, experience anything without fear. Totally dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Always knowing His mercy, expecting His mercy, which is also one, of course, the symptoms of surrender. I skipped that part. The six signs of surrender. We're out of time. But anyway, one of them is that the devotee always feels dependent on the Lord and always expects His protection, or His or her protection, our protection, I should say. Right? Okay, so I think I have wrung everything out I can on this one. And I just want to say that, of course, our greatest protection is spiritual protection. And the result of remembering Krishna is what? Bhagavad Gita says 8:8:8. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. Krishna's assurance. Okay? Well, glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you all very much for your kind attention. Questions, comments? Can we start with the ladies?
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, can you elaborate what it really means?
Yeah, speak up. I'm half deaf here.
Can you elaborate what it really means to be fully surrendered? Because sometimes we go back and forth, and at what point do we get, where we don't go backwards, we just keep going forward?
Okay, the first thing is to elaborate on the point. I heard about going backwards and forwards in our devotional service,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And what was the first thing you said? Elaborate on...
And what it means to be fully surrendered.
What it means to be fully surrendered. Okay. I don't know. When I become fully surrendered, I'll be able to better explain. But I do know because we've had the opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada. By the example of my guru, I know what it means to be fully surrendered. And also the lives of all of our great acharyas, the great devotees. And I can even see in some of my godbrothers and godsisters, others, people who appear very, very surrendered. I don't know if they're fully surrendered, but, you know, greatly surrendered. It means being dependent on Krishna, on nothing else. It means there's not something else I'm looking for, something else I think I can enjoy, something else for me. Like, if I just do this, you know, like sometimes people on my age, at least, sometimes they kind of lament, oh, you know, I should have done this, I should have. No, there's nothing we should have done except for maybe become more Krishna conscious sooner or join the movement sooner or something like that. Otherwise, there's, and that's what being fully surrendered is, just being satisfied. You know, Krishna knows what's best for us. He's giving us what we need, and we accept whatever that is. Now, as you said, sometimes we come close to that, and sometimes it seems like we drop back a little bit. That's the process. I was speaking to one sannyasi friend of mine very recently, and I was sort of saying the same thing to him. I said, you know, sometimes I feel really, really Krishna consciousness, and then, you know, the next day, not so much, you know, or an hour later, not so much, you know. Yeah, you have these heights, and then you can't keep that so much. And that's all he said to me. And he's a very staunch advanced, he's a good friend of mine, sannyasi. He said, that's the process. He says, that's what it is. That's what bhakti yoga, sadhana bhakti is. That, you know, it's like this a little bit. But the main thing is we want to make sure that this line, say we have a graph and line going up and down, that it's always going upward. That it's not going this way, downward. Okay? So the ups and downs, we have to tolerate. And just pray. And I find myself, when I feel the downs a little bit, I just try to pray. Chant, of course, chant, read, hear and chant. But I'm also praying. We have to remember Vandana. You know, Krishna, please help me. Lord Nrisingadev, please destroy these anartas and samskaras within my heart. I pray that way a lot because I have a lot of those anartas and a lot of those things to overcome in my heart. So I pray to Lord Nrisingadev, please, you know, rip them out of my heart. Ooh, although that sounds a little, I don't know if I really want that, but at least I'd like to want that, you know. And the more that we try to be in the mood, Krishna helps us and the guru helps us. Okay, and we can't do it on our own. We can't purify ourselves of these hundreds and thousands of lifetimes of junk. That's the technical spiritual term. It's called junk in the heart. That was a joke. Nobody likes it. Okay, I'll have to try that again. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? Anyone else? Maybe anyone else? Some comments on that? It's a great question. It's a great comment. Anyone have some? We have some realization.
I don't know if I have a comment on that, but I was just thinking, you know, this concept of always remembering Krishna and never forget.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, when I address the deities, you know, I'm thinking, wow. Half of the time, I'm thinking I have to make sure I put the clothes on right, and I'm not really thinking this is a personality of Godhead. And so then I said, oh, no, I have to think this is Krishna, this is Krishna. Then I force and I forget, oh, I have to put a necklace this way or this. So I'm thinking it's just like...
That is remembering Krishna.
Well, and it's the same thing in cooking. Like when you're cooking, I have to make sure, oh, did I spice this right, or did I do this? But I'm not thinking, oh...
But you're doing it for Krishna's service.
I know, but the thing is, the consciousness is not there half of the time that I'm doing it for Krishna. Yeah. I'm just thinking of getting it right. And then I thought, at the end of the offering, I said, I don't know if I remember Krishna all this time, even though I'm doing the service for him. So this concept of remembering Krishna is just like drinking...
Oh, I know what you mean. Many, many years ago, I used to sometimes dress little deities, and I'm terrible at it. That's why I don't do it anymore. And in fact, I'm so bad at it that what my main consciousness was when I was dressing deities was anxiety.
Yeah,
I'm scared to death that I was going to do something wrong. I was going to stick a pin. I was going to do something terrible, make some great offense to our beloved, you know, Lord, the deities. So yeah, it's and I was thinking, was I really meditating on thinking of Krishna? No, I was thinking about how scared I was or anxious I was. So that, but you know what? I found as I did it more, I gained less of that. And so as you continue your service, Krishna is seeing that service. He's seeing the fact that you're thinking, how do I need to cook this right? How do I need to make the necklace? You're thinking of Krishna. That's bhakti. That's devotional service. And as you do it more and more and more and more, you'll be thinking of Krishna through the process. You're doing the process right. And you will get the result you want eventually. We have to have that faith.
You know, I was out on Sankirtan the other day, and this one person came up to me and he said, do you love God? I said, I want to love God.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yes, I really want to love God. He said, so what do you pray for? I said, I pray that I can serve him every single moment of my life.
There you go.
And he went, what? You know? Yeah. And he said, I'm a pastor. I don't think like that. And then I said, he said, do you think he loves you? I said, without a doubt. Without a doubt he loves me. He said, how do you know? And I said, I don't know, I sort of feel it in my heart. And he said, I know that God loves me because he sent his only son to die for me. I said, that's how you think God loves you? I said, he provides everything for you. He's giving you everything you need. He said, I'm grateful to God. But I know he loves me because he sent his only son. Do you believe in Jesus Christ? I said, of course I believe in Jesus Christ. But I said, we want to go beyond that. We want to serve God. We want to beg him for some service.
Not just appreciate that he died for us. Probably he said that was a little morbid. You know, I mean, I don't know if you use that word morbid. You know, he said, they killed their guru, you know.
Yeah.
And they're celebrating their guru being killed. It's kind of, well, I mean, I understand it. I mean, it's deeper than that philosophically. I don't want to diminish, you know, that belief. But at the same time, you know, it's not quite our mood, is it?
Right. So
our mood is... Krishna and Radharani are so beautiful. Look at them. We love them. We want to celebrate them. You want to put on the necklaces right. You want to cook nicely for them. Yeah. But those were good answers, by the way. And that's the thing is, the devotee always takes a humble position. Yes, I'm trying to love God. I would like to love God. I want to serve God. I want to remember God. And by Krishna's mercy of my guru, maybe someday I will.
And he finally said, you know, I'm a pastor in the church. And he was saying, I don't think like you, but I think I have some inspiration how I should be doing my Sunday sermons.
Very good. Nice example.
Sometimes I was just saying, when you say something that you feel in your realization, where you are, who you are at. So then I was coming back. He was still standing there passing all these little things. And he said, would you like to come to my church and tell the people what you're doing? And I thought, wow, that would be great. But I didn't take him up on it because it was such a busy thing and, you know, so much stuff was happening. But I was just thinking that we are a little more fortunate to think that, you know, I mean, I don't know so much about Christian philosophy, but if that's the level they're at, and when they hear our philosophy, it must inspire some kind of great thing in their heart.
Yeah. That's true. That reminds me of an example I had speaking. This was a very I thought he was a very sincere Christian. He wasn't trying to argue or try to convince me to accept Jesus or anything, but he was just, he wanted to hear what our philosophy was, and he was describing a little bit how he was feeling. And so he asked more questions, and I tried to describe him the whole process of bhakti, kind of like you were saying, and how we want to always think of him and always work for him in everything we do. We mold our lives around in such a way. And finally he says, and I talked about God, and God's a person. He says, well, you know, you all kind of believe pretty much what I do. He said, except you want to do it all the time. You know? Yes. And that's exactly, that was the same thing your pastor friend, a guy was saying. You know, like, they don't, that's a novel concept to people, really. Okay, we understand religion, that's good. It's good to believe in God, but all the time? You're going to do it your whole life? I mean, you know, where's the fun? You know, they don't realize that Krishna is the most fun, you know. Yes, Madhuji. Did you, anyone? Oh, well, okay, go ahead. One more back here.
Yes, okay.
Or?
Go ahead.
No, come on. We have to hear Stiti D.
You
got
to pass it off.
No, go ahead. You got the mic, so.
Right. You know, that reminds, it's like sort of saying, I know my father loves me because he left me an inheritance. And then if he didn't leave me an inheritance, I guess we never had a relationship. You know, and then he knows God loves him. Like you said, it's like all intellectual. It's, you know, it's like, where's the actual relationship? It's all external markers. Anyway, there's a lot there to deconstruct. But then you were talking about you're cooking for Krishna, and it sounds like the mood of awe and reverence is interfering with your bhakti there. You're just cooking for Krishna, like Mother Yasoda isn't thinking, oh, Krishna's actually God, I better get the, you know, breakfast on time. You know, she's just doing it. You know, she's not like thinking it out, you know, she's just doing it. And I mean, people are cooking all the time for so many reasons. They're not cooking for Krishna. So the foundational meditation that brought you here is to do it for Krishna. And then you have to do it. It's not like I'm doing it for Krishna, but everything just burnt. But I'm thinking about Krishna. You know, you're actually doing it and want to do it.
Exactly. I thank you. That was a good example. And that's the example Mother showed is very good. You know, in fact, remember in the Dhamma at our pastime when she puts him down to go get the milk?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, if Krishna is the most important, her relationship with Krishna is the most important, why would she put him down when he wanted to nurse or whatever and go take care of the milk? Because of her bhakti, she wanted to make sure that Krishna had the best milk. And she wanted to make sure the milk was right so she could give it to him. So she even put him down for a minute to go make sure that she could serve him well. So it's kind of like that. You're wanting to get the best necklace to put on him or cook the best preparation. That's bhakti. And as I think another point that CTD made, which was really, really good, was one of the differences between Krishna consciousness and so many other practices is this idea of relationship or rasa. You know, we're trying to establish relationship, not an intellectual standing, oh, God is great, therefore I've got to worship him. You know, or, you know, it's like, where's that at? You know, Krishna's the most powerful, and because of his power, it's kind of like saying, we have a very, very powerful king or a powerful dictator, so I have to surrender to them, I've got to do it, or I'll be in trouble. That doesn't please Krishna so much, right? In fact, all these different, well, that this brings us into, you know, the verses of Bhagavatam, when they talk about all the different ways that people approach Krishna out of fear, out of, you know, even hatred, you know, giving the different examples, Kamsa, Shishupa, all these ones, or out of friendship, or out of, you know, and, you know, our acharyas, you know, discuss that verse so much, right? I mean, it's like you hear all these references for it, and of course, what they come down to, there's only two of those that devotees really like. You remember what they are?
Yes.
Tell us. Of those seven, we reject the hatred, we reject all of that, because that's not favorable, although it's thinking of Krishna. So it has some benefit. In fact, they got liberation, those who did that. And that's the point. But who were the two that were favorable?
The verse is 7, Bhagavatam 7.1.32. Kamat deshat bhayat sneha jata bhakti isharamana abeshutu agam hitta bhavata gatim gata.
Those
who went back home, back to Godhead, these are the... And then next verse goes the example, Gopa kamat. Last by the
so you had Vayam, you had fear, you had...
Yes.
Yeah.
So out of these six, two are unfavorable. The Deshat, hateful, like Shishupal and Kongshu, out of fear.
Yeah.
So these are not unfavorable to bhakti. And then four left. Out of four, two are Vaidhi Bhakti, that Narad Muni is himself depicting, and Yudhishthira Maharaj, whom he is speaking to, the Pandavas, they are also, because they did not write any scripture, and that is also based on that their service attitude to Krishna in a Vaidhi standard.
Right.
So only two left is the Vrishnis or Jadavas, and also the Brajavasis, like, who are Sambandha Atmika. Sambandha Atmika means their relationship comes first, then their love follows. And Kama Atmika, where their love comes first, of course there is no relationship really.
Not material love, but correct. Temple Gopis, yeah.
So these two are the prominent for us, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that we follow. These are Brajanuga.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I got that exactly, but the two are
Kamatmika Bhakti. The love for Krishna.
Kama means lust, but it's not material lust. Yeah. It's the lust in that is in Madhurya Rasa.
And the second one is Sambandha Atmika.
Sambandha.
They have a relationship. Mother Yashoda always think he's my son first.
Sambandha refers to all of the other personal rasas that are there in Vraja other than Kama, Rupa, whatever, you know, the Madhurya. In other words, Vatsalya, mostly Vatsalya and Sakya, right? Yeah. Friendship and Dasya. There's Dasya also there in Vraja. But the three most prominent ones that are so different because they're not based on reverence, right, are friendship, parental, and conjugal. And so those are very, very different moods than just, you know, I have to worship God because he's great. He's a powerful. This is... And that's what pleases Krishna the most, which is love for him without the feeling of greatness or majesty. And so even in Dwarka, even with the Pandavas, there's some of that. Now, so it describes him like Arjuna is in both Sakya and Dasya, because he sees Krishna, he's Krishna's his friend, but sometimes it says, in Bhagavad Gita, it doesn't say, I created a fence to you, I sat on your bed, I just treated you like a friend, I hear you're the personality of Godhead. So he kind of goes back and forth. You know, between, you know, and when Mother Yashoda, whenever she sees Krishna as, like when she looks in his mouth and sees the universal form, she doesn't like it at all. She's confused, she's frightened, she's upset. So Krishna quickly covers her back with yoga maya, and you think, oh, my beautiful baby, my beautiful young boy. So, yeah, Krishna, this is basically what's one thing that's a little different than the Gaudiya Sampradaya, than the other Vaishnava Sampradayas, right? In Ramanuja Sampradaya and the others, you're going to see much more awe and reverence. You know, like you go to Tirupati, which is a wonderful temple, beautiful temple. Millions of people go there. You know, we all went there when we were, you know, visiting there one time. But it's basically, you know, Lakshmi Narayan, which is the worship of awe and reverence. That this Krishna is God, is Vishnu. We know Krishna's God, but ultimately, we don't really want to have our, you know, our siddha sarup, our ultimate relationship, or siddhadeya, really an honor. At least most of us, you know, who are in this line, because that's really the line from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and all the acharyas. You know, all have taught this mood, the Vraja, the Vrindavan mood. And I think we talked about this before. It doesn't mean that everybody who's a devotee has to be in that mood exactly, but that tends to be, you know, that tends to be our line.
We want to be in the relationship with the church from homes at home. He has to have a relationship with the family.
Yeah. And probably gives an example, right? The Supreme Court judge?
Yes.
Yes, he's a Supreme Court judge. He comes home. Does his family know he is? Well, sort of. It's like, yeah, I guess he's a Supreme Court. But what is he? He's our father, and we play with him, right? He gets an example, he plays a piece of horse and he's riding on his back, even though he's like this great, you know, powerful person. So, yeah, probably gives examples like that of how the devotees, you know, see Krishna. Yeah. I mean, in fact, sometimes, you know, like, I happened to just be reading this recently in the 10th canto, sometimes the gopis, they'll say how Krishna is the supreme and God and everything else, but they don't really care. You know what I mean? It's I don't know if I'm saying it right. They care, but they don't care.
The relationship is sweeter.
The relationship is central. And even like, it's kind of like, oh, how wonderful it is that, you know, our lover is God. Or the cowboys will say, oh, he's so powerful. He must, and Nanamara says, you know, Gargamuni told us that he'll be just like Narayan. Isn't that great that our son is like Narayan? They don't say, Narayan has become my son. They say, my son has these great qualities, kind of like Narayan. Maybe he's a demigod. We don't know what he is, but he's really great, isn't he? In other words, it enhances their love. When they have some knowledge or experience some of that greatness, it either gets covered over or it actually enhances their feeling of the sweetness of that relationship. Oh, that's very, very wonderful. You know, I just pray that sometime, somehow, in some lifetime, I can have some realization of what I'm saying here.
Like when
the
gopis saw Krishna. Where is
Krishna? Yeah. Oh, when they saw Narayan, yeah. Yeah. Oh, Narayan, have you seen Krishna?
What's that?
He killed Bali, even though Bali did nothing wrong, he killed him. Or there's another instance in that same shloka, right? The tortoise. Radharani's saying. He's such a rascal. Killed Bali for no reason.
Oh, he
killed
said.
Bali, he's Ramachandra. They know he's Ramachandra.
Yeah.
But he's a rascal. Killed Bali.
Right.
There's the other one, that tortoise.
In other words, the gopis understand all of his avatars, but then they criticize him in a very familiar way.
Yeah.
And look what he did to Bali Maharaj. Did nothing wrong, and he tied him up. Yeah. I one of the best ones I like with the gopis is, you know, after he leaves him, he comes back and they're really kind of angry at him for leaving him.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Like, why did you leave us? We surrendered devotees, you know. What did we do? And he gives all his explanations, or maybe it's another part maybe it's in chapter 47 when Uddhava's giving the explanation. They say, well, first you say you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you're in our heart and you never leave us. And now you say, oh, sometimes it's just fate, you know, that makes people separate and go apart. He says, well, so which is it? You know, it's like they'll catch him, you know, and say, yeah, first you're saying it's just fate and I can't do anything about it. Then you're saying you're the Supreme, you know, so gotcha. You know? So, and he enjoys that. Krishna lets them have these little arguments and he thinks it's fun for him. He enjoys that banter that repartee with his devotees sometimes. It's another kind of rasa.
But even with the cowboy boys, they said, I'm stronger. You know, you, Krishna, I can run faster than you.
Yeah. Yeah, and Sridhar thinks, I could have killed the demons.
Yes.
You know, Balaram says, of course I could. But they want to see Krishna because they love Krishna and they want to see him glorified in doing it. Another thing that is funny, I don't know where I read this, but sometimes the demigods will come and, you know, throw flowers when he kills a demon and worship him. And then afterwards, sometimes the cowboys, they start making fun of the demigods. They imitate them, you know. With, you know, like, they have no reverence. You know, they're 8-year-old kids. They like to goof around.
It is sweet.
Yeah.
I think the main point is Krishna loves them. Krishna accepts them.
Yes. That yeah, we're getting a little bit away from the philosophical point here. Yes, Krishna. Krishna's the greatest love. Yeah, but these rasas of Krishna and his devotees are just wonderful. You know, I mean, but we have to know both. We have to study the philosophy. We have to know the basis. And as long as we have these bodies in the material world, and we also have a job to do, which Krishna has tasked us as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by Srila Prabhupada and the gurus to spread Krishna consciousness, to bring back the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. So we have to do that, which means, well, they say that, you know, even the great Uttama Adhikari, like Srila Prabhupada, he can't be just at that level of time. He's got to kind of step back. They say what do they say about becoming to the Majjhim level for the purpose of preaching, you know? In other words, it's explained like that they'll have to act on that level for the purpose of being able to preach Krishna consciousness and help others. Otherwise, everything's great. You know, everybody's pure spirit soul. Krishna has a relationship with everybody. And so why would you preach? No, but they do out of compassion. Krishna's mercy is most shown by his devotees. Krishna set it up that way. He could make everyone Krishna conscious himself, but he gives that service and he gives that glory to his great devotees. That's his process.
Well, if you're always remembering Krishna and never forgetting, when you speak to someone, it naturally comes out. If you'll say something, it's conscious, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's your life, you know.
Right.
When you meet somebody, it's just like this pastor, I was meaning to say something, but it comes from the heart, you know.
Yeah.
You can't go by without saying something about Krishna.
Right.
You know? Even if it's not directly saying this is Krishna consciousness,
right.
You'll say something.
Right.
About a subreligious principle, but, you know, something.
Yeah, I do 2 hours a week. That's fine. Got covered. Okay, I'm probably holding everybody up from what they need to do this morning, so we should probably be in class. Oh, was there anything?
She said a question.
Well, feel free to get up and leave. You know, did was there a question? I think you're okay. Is it up? Yes. Oh, it's out?
Okay, and someone asked for a problem. For how long do I have to surrender for? And he said, until you die.
The remark was, someone asked Prabhupada, how long do I have to surrender for? And he said, until you die. In other words, surrendering is permanent situation condition. Okay, we done? Okay, I'll go ask the Srila Prabhupada.